For Complex News, I'm Jinx with a breaking news report. The New York Police Department cop who killed Staten Island resident Eric Garner will not be indicted, a grand jury ruled today. The cop, Daniel Pantaleo, was reported on July 17th arresting Garner for selling illegal cigarettes on the street. Garner, father of six, who was 43 at the time of his death, was put into an illegal chokehold and held on the ground by multiple NYPD officers. Garner went into cardiac arrest and died at the site of the confrontation. His death was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner's office. Garner's death became the subject of national attention after video was published by the New York Daily News showing the entire incident happening. According to multiple news outlets, potential charges against Pantaleo included criminally negligent homicide, manslaughter, or reckless endangerment. This is not the first time Pantaleo has found himself in trouble, as it's been reported that the cop, who was pulled off the street in the wake of Garner's death, had been the subject of two policing-related lawsuits prior to this. Like so many other cities around the nation, New York recently found itself a hotspot of protest activity after a grand jury ruled in Missouri not to indict Darren Wilson, the St. Louis County police officer who killed unarmed 18-year-old Michael Brown in a confrontation. This grand jury's ruling will no doubt lead to a new round of protests, which NYPD Commissioner Bill Braddon told reporters he was prepared for, explaining, "We've had quite a bit of time to prepare for the events that will unfold here over the next several days. This is a department that is very well experienced in dealing with demonstrations of all sizes. We here at Complex will continue to cover this story as it develops."
There are major developments tonight in the case of a neighborhood watch captain in Florida who shot and killed an unarmed 17-year-old. The U.S. Justice Department has now opened a civil rights investigation, and the local prosecutor has convened a grand jury to consider criminal charges. Justice correspondent Bob Orr has the latest.
In the 3 weeks since Trayvon Martin was killed inside this gated Florida community, Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman has maintained he shot Martin in self-defense. But attorney Benjamin Crump, who represents Martin's family, says the unarmed teenager was targeted because of his race.
"Arrest George Zimmerman for the killing of Trayvon Martin in cold blood today."
Crump said on the night of the shooting, Martin was heading home from the store and on the phone with his girlfriend. In a telephone interview, the young woman told Crump she listened as Martin was suddenly confronted by a stranger. The girlfriend said she urged Martin to run away, and he responded he would walk fast. At around the same time, Zimmerman also made a call to the Sanford, Florida police to report a suspicious person in his neighborhood.
He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
What happened next is the critical question. A law enforcement source says Zimmerman told police he began retreating to his car and only fired his weapon after Martin jumped him from behind. Zimmerman has a license to carry a gun, and Florida law allows people to use lethal force in self-defense. But Crump insists Zimmerman was the aggressor. And records show Zimmerman has been a frequent caller to police, with 46 calls in the last year, often reporting African Americans. Now, Tom Perez, who heads the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, says the government will determine if a hate crime may have occurred.
"Good morning, Chairman Durbin and honored members of the subcommittee. My name is Lucia Holman McBath, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak before this great institution today. I was raised in a family steeped in justice and confident in the triumphant goodness of humanity. My mother was a registered nurse, and my father, who served in the U.S. Army Dental Corps, was also for over 20 years president of the NAACP for the state of Illinois. He worked actively with President Lyndon Baines Johnson in the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. If he could see me here today, testifying in front of the United States Senate, he would be beaming with pride and amazed at how far his daughter had come until he came to understand what brought me here. I appear before you because my son Jordan was shot and killed last November while sitting in the back seat of a friend's car listening to loud music. The man who killed him opened fire on four unarmed teenagers even as they tried to move out of harm's way. That man was empowered by the Stand Your Ground statute. I am here to tell you there was no ground to stand. There was no threat. No one was trying to invade his home, his vehicle, nor threaten him or his family. There was a vociferous argument about music, during which the accused, Michael Dunn, did not feel that he was treated with respect. "You're not going to talk to me like that," he shouted, as he sprayed the car that Jordan sat in with bullets, killing him instantly. When Jordan's friends tried to back the car away, Mr. Dunn aimed his handgun and fired off several more rounds, 9 total, pierced the car. There are any number of ways that this interaction might have gone, but there was only one way it could have ended once a gun entered the equation.
Although we are celebrating in some manner that the police officers are going to be charged, that's just one step to getting justice, because we know full well that charge does not mean convicted. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have to just take a step back and realize that although they might be charged, they have not been convicted of anything. In our case with Trayvon Martin, the person was charged. Yes, they were charged, and we had a full trial. But he, at the end of the day, he was not convicted. So he's walking around just like anybody else, as if he has done nothing. But we all know that God sits high and looks low. And though you might get away with man's law, God sees all.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to AJC Radio as we tonight remember the victims of the lives that mattered in the deaths of these women who are speaking tonight in the preview of this show, who's all of them mothers who have lost their siblings, their sons. Tonight, AJC Radio takes a trip to honor the victims. And we say today that lives matter. Black Lives Matter. And I'll tell you right now, these ladies will be joining us tonight on this program. Reverend Wanda Johnson, also Lucia Davis McBeth, also Sabrina Fulton, and also in closing, Gwen Carr Gardner. We will be talking to them and hearing their story as we remember the victims who have died senselessly in America. Hang on to your seats, folks. AJC Radio is getting ready to take off. There you have it. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Charlisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and Jeanette Williams. And folks, tonight, if you came to hear something interesting, informative, we're going to have it tonight as we honor these brave ladies who come forward to speak about the injustice of America that resulted in the death and the loss of their loved ones. And tonight, it's going to be a humdinger. And welcome tonight, America. We thank you for taking some time with us tonight. For this special program, as we talk to these fascinating ladies, and Lisa, Cliff, Jeanette, this probably goes above the bar as we remember a painful situation in America, and it doesn't come any closer to home than until you start talking to the mothers of the slain. Lisa, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a very interesting show, because you're looking back and dealing with some of the issues that were out there, issues that are still out there. That, and seeing where these ladies feel like our country should be, what kind of position should our law enforcement be in, what kind of changes have been made that they've seen, what kind of changes they think need to be made. So I think it's going to be very interesting to get their take on that, considering that they were the ones who lost so much.
Absolutely, and when you listen to Lucia talk about that she actually went before Congress to tell the story of the tragedy and the tragedies, the countless ones, and it makes you think about the stories that were not reported, the stories that are not on the headlines, but the broken hearts of mothers across this country, as we take a look and a reflection, we look back at the tragedy that shook a nation. And Cliff, as we dig into this and have an opportunity at least to revisit this, one of the young ladies said to me yesterday, I had an opportunity to talk to them, and she stated to me, this story must be told. And you better tell it, because otherwise we fall asleep at the wheel in America and forget exactly the horrific tragedies that have touched the nation.
Yeah, and you know that all these mothers have to be feeling, intense pain about the loss of their sons. But they have taken on the greater role to say, you know, we have to get the story out. We have to let America know that we cannot continue to allow this type of activity to happen, this type of behavior from our law enforcement, from those who feel like, you know, they want to be law enforcement, that they're a neighborhood watching can get away with murder. So we commend them for taking a stand and bringing light and passing on the information about what happened to them, because, you know, they're obviously, this pain is still fresh to them. These are their sons. They were, snuffed out in the prime of their life. And for them as mothers to stand tall, to be able to stand before Congress, to be able to tell their story, on television so many times that we've seen them, and to come here on AJC Radio and share their story with us, we commend these mothers, because it takes a lot, it takes a whole lot to stand up in when your child has been gunned down for no particular reason.
And Jeanette Williams, also a mother of a teenager and a little one. And Jeanette, as you listen to that, I would wonder that probably the heart of every mother is breaking tonight as we hear and visit the loss of a child. Jeanette, your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Like you said, I'm telling you, this is a very, very painful thing to remember, but at the same time, it's a subject that needs to be addressed. I can't even imagine, like I said, having a son 18 and just going through that. It's just time out for the media and for these people to, you know, stop trying to prosecute the victims. I mean, these were the victims, and it's just sickening.
No, absolutely. And the folks of America, ladies and gentlemen of America, we encourage you to call in tonight and get in the conversation. We have had the privilege of having all of these ladies on at the same time, and we'll have a panel of, I call them heroes, who are standing up and fighting for justice, even for the departed. And if you want to call in to be a part of the program tonight, you want to comment, you want to ask these ladies questions, that's going to be coming in on the other side of the break. That number is 347-838-8976. That is 347-838-8976. And folks, as we get ready, and summer surely is at the door of ending, as we approach fall here in a day or two, the current of America is on the direction for change. And at AJC Radio, we intend to bring the message of justice all around the world. Before we get started, Lisa, give us the disclaimer, please.
Just want to remind everyone that we are not attorneys and that A Just Cause does not provide any legal advice. You want to contact your own personal legal advisor for all of your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers and guests do not necessarily reflect that of A Just Cause. And as always, thank you so much for choosing to tune in and spend a little time with us this evening.
And thank you for that, Lisa. And we're going to get into some current events, things going on in America. Right now, we do know that the Pope is in Washington, D.C. And my understanding, Lisa and Cliff, we had an opportunity to be on the steps of the nation's capital and down the hollow halls of Congress. And Lisa, it's been interesting. There is a cry in the land that change take place. And Lisa, we're seeing an open door, if you will, with Congress right now, as folks are looking for direction and answers. Very successful trip. Good thoughts, Lisa, if you want to share that with our listeners. What happened there?
Yeah, I think I think the progress that's being made is phenomenal. The fact that we have so many people listening and wanting to hear about what's going on, wanting to do what they can to make a difference, to make changes, that is so much. It's a long way that we've come to get to the point where we've got that going on. And I think it took time, took a lot of travel, took a lot of hotels, took a lot of eating out. But we went out there and we did what we needed to do, and it's paying off. It's finally starting to pay off, and you're seeing a difference. You're seeing people and members of Congress and senators and the people up there wanting to really get involved and do what do whatever they can to try to help them make a difference. They're more involved now than they've ever been.
Oh, without question. And we our hats are off to the members of Congress as we, again, at JJC Radio and at Just Cause, are in search for justice. And we're going to bring that message of justice all around the world. And any other, Lisa, any topics or things in the news that's on your mind that we want to share with our listeners that's going on in the country right now?
Well, Lamont, the one thing I was looking at today in the news, they were talking about they were worried about people, terrorists, impersonating cops before the Pope's visit.
Oh, wow.
Trying to get in there so they can get some more attacks going on in U.S. soil. And it's a little bit of a scary thought that you got people out there that they've got to really be on their toes and keep be on their P's and Q's to make sure that they're taking care of this nation. We've got all these people out there. There are a lot of people out there that want to do harm to our country. And we've got to make sure that our people, that our police officers, our firefighters, everybody is doing what they need to do. They were saying that they were worried that terrorists may impersonate police officers, firefighters, and EMTs to launch attacks inside the U.S.
Well, I'll tell you right now, folks, if you think that that's I said it last week, if you think that's a Hollywood production or something on Lifetime Movie Network, we got news for you, folks. This isn't a production. This is real life. And this show is dedicated. We talk about Lisa, Cliff, and Jeanette keeping America safe. We have the answer, and we have that solution. And we sent a plea out to President Obama, the administration, the members of Congress, and the Department of Justice as we look for clemency for six men who hold the key to keeping the homeland safe. And that's the IRP6. This show is dedicated to them, and every show to the IRP6. Without their injustice that happened to them, AJC Radio and the Just Cause would not be here. We fight for their release. The IRP6 are David Banks, Gary Walker, Kendrick Barnes, Demetrius Harper, Dave Zerpolo, and Clinton Stewart. And I'll tell you right now, folks, we can talk the talk, but it's coming time in America we're going to have to walk the walk. And these men, and Cliff, you're well aware, that there is a software product created by these men, driven by a vision and a passion to keep America's children and our future generations safe. Your thoughts on that, Cliff?
Sorry about that. I was on mute. But that's absolutely right. I mean, we see, you know, we look back on another anniversary of 9/11, and we are reminded about the reasons that the 9/11 attacks were allowed to happen. It all boils down to these federal law enforcement agencies were not sharing data. And the software built by the IRP6 and their company, IRP Solutions, it was built for DHS. It was built according to DHS requirements, according to the customizations that were requested by DHS. So it was custom built for them. And it needs to be in place. It would help to ensure that we don't have any more attacks on our homeland.
Oh, without question, and the body bags have filled up in America. And I'll tell you right now, we are at a level of high concern in this country. And you can go to freetheirp6.org to learn more about the IRP6, their vision, their passion for America. And another top story happening, but I don't believe this. It says a Florida man accused of shooting at George Zimmerman, ironically, in May, will stand trial for attempted second-degree murder, a judge ruled on Tuesday. So someone apparently has attempted to render justice to Mr. Zimmerman for him taking a life. It says here that Judge Deborah S. Nelson ruled there was probable cause that Matthew, it looks like Apperson, should be tried on three charges in addition to the attempted murder charge. He also faces one count of aggravated assault with a firearm and one count of shooting into an occupied vehicle. Cliff, wow. You know, we don't promote seeking justice and taking the law in our own hands, but it gives you a little bit of the temperature of this country with their outrage about injustice. Your thoughts on that?
That's right. I mean, you know, the old adage says what goes around comes around. And, you know, George Zimmerman, in my opinion, and a lot of people that I know, most Americans feel like, you know, George Zimmerman should have been found guilty of murder. You don't shoot somebody who's unarmed, that you stalked, and then get away with murder. So for somebody to go after him, you know, maybe he will find justice eventually.
I'll tell you what, he's one of many people that are outraging America. And again, we don't condone it here on AJC Radio to take justice into your own hands. But you can understand the outrage. And with, ironically, tonight's show dealing with the mother of Trayvon Martin, hearing her story tonight. Ironically, that this happens today in America, that somebody tried to take his life. We're going to get into that further about Mr. Zimmerman and the actual premeditation that took place. Ladies and gentlemen, this is AJC Radio. You have dialed into AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And coming up, the victims, remembering the victims whose lives matter. We're going to talk to the mothers of the slain that has hit the headlines all across the land. Folks, hang on to your seats as we come to another show to bring justice in America. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of AJC Radio and a campaign that we have started that is underway entitled Spotlight on Capitol Hill. This program is new to AJC Radio, but it is an exciting time when we take a few moments every Thursday evening to highlight members of Congress, their initiatives that are not only important to them, their constituents, and the nation as a whole. We invite you every Thursday to tune in to AJC Radio to hear your congressman or your senator and their initiatives that are here to shape a nation and to bring about change. We invite you cordially, and as we fight for justice, as we seek justice daily, we'll come together as not only the American people. Join us every Thursday for Spotlight on Capitol Hill. God bless you, and as always, God bless America. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to AJC Radio, where we bring the message of justice all around the world. And tonight we remember the victims whose lives matter. And we will have the opportunity tonight to talk to the mothers of slain children, their children, who were killed senselessly in this country. And that is Lucia Davis McBeth. We'll also be talking to Eric Gardner's mother, Gwen Carr Gardner. We will also be talking to Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton, and also we'll be speaking with Reverend Wanda Johnson, whose son was shot down, Oscar Grant III, killed by a single shot to the back from an officer senselessly in an Oakland train station right here in the United States of America. And we get into that tonight as we remember the victims. And Cliff, Lisa, Jeanette, over the last several months, we have seen a lot that shook the country within the last year. And you know what? It is still going on today. And we're going to have an opportunity tonight on this program to reflect on where are we today as a nation, given the tragedies and the number of lives that have been lost. Are we any closer to solving the problem here in the United States? Lisa?
You know, I'm not really seeing that. I mean... Maybe I could have a skewed view, but I don't think things have gotten better. I think things are finally starting to be seen for what they are, to a point. But to actually make progress and to have things change, I think we still got a little bit of a road ahead of us before we see that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, Lisa, because I think that just because more light is being brought to it doesn't mean that anything has changed. I mean, this has been going on for years,
exactly,
for centuries. I don't think anything just stopped and changed because the light is being shed on it.
Yeah, people just weren't seeing it as much. It wasn't as visible. You didn't have all the cell phones and the videos going on and people having eyewitnesses to all this stuff. You didn't have all this before. Now you've got eyewitness at the camera or a phone that can't be disputed. Well, even though they still try to dispute some of that anyway, but it really can't be disputed. So it's actually being seen. It's being noticed. But it's nothing new. So I don't think it's because it's being, all of a sudden they're seeing it, they suddenly made a drastic change.
Right. I think for some people it's bringing awareness, but I think it's something that, I'm just going to say it, the black race as a whole has always had to deal with and always has known it's there. I do think that the awareness is important, but at the same time, like I said, I don't think it's just something new or something that's just drastically changed.
Cliff, I'm sorry, Cliff.
No, I just want to say that, you know, when you look at the bottom line, you look at the numbers on what's going on in America as far as, you know, law enforcement killing people. The telltale sign is that they still don't want to release reports that show how many people get killed by law enforcement per year. They don't want to release the demographics of those numbers. They don't want to say law enforcement killed this many black males, this many Hispanic males, this many black females. They don't want to get into it. So now, you know, technology has forced them to say, okay, we have to deal with this. But then you look at the other part of it as technology is exposing that, you know, police brutality, law enforcement killings. But then when you see the percentage of indictments that come down, then you see the percentage of these law enforcement officers that get convicted. I mean, when charges get brought and you hear, you know, that they're going to a grand jury. And the old saying is that, you know, you can indict a ham sandwich. Any prosecutor can indict anybody in a grand jury. It's like a 99% success rate. But suddenly you have a DA who can't get an indictment when it comes down to one of his cops is the one that he's pressing the charges against. Suddenly you get an indictment you can't get an indictment when, you know, a cop guns down a young black man in the street, like in the the kid's name in St. Louis?
Ferguson?
Yeah.
Michael Brown.
Yeah, Michael Brown. I'm sorry, I was reading Eric Gardner's name. So, but when it comes to things like that, you can't get, how does a prosecutor not get an indictment when you have all of the evidence, all the witnesses, and he's going after an indictment? But it shows that even in 2015, there's still a bias, there's still, you know, basically a racial bias about who the prosecutors want to prosecute. Now, anytime, you know, if I as a black man get charged with something, the likelihood of me being, you know, indicted, being found guilty is very high. Then you get a cop who kills a kid, unarmed, running in the opposite direction, and no indictment. You can't even get an indictment.
Well,
not found innocent by a jury, but you cannot even get an indictment. That is what I think. It's so sickening about what's going on in America today.
No, without question. And I'll tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen of America, these are real stories. And when you think about Trayvon Martin, just one, and make no mistake about it, ladies and gentlemen, that we understand there are more victims. We probably don't have enough radio shows in a lifetime to highlight and honor all the victims that have died, that have been slain as a result of inappropriate, reckless behavior by law enforcement. And these are things that are real. So tonight, without question, we salute all mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers who have lost loved ones at the hand of law enforcement, of overzealous people in the community, neighborhood watch folks. And the first time I've ever heard of that was with Mr. Zimmerman. And I use the Mr. very lightly. Make no mistake about it. You took a life. And to the fact that, and I was having a conversation today, that had he listened, as you heard on the beginning of the show, as you listened to the fact that the 911 call, they made the statement very clear, do not follow him.
That's
do
right.
Not do that. That one statement, had that been adhered to, Trayvon Martin is alive today.
That's right.
That's right.
And that's very, very serious business. Yes.
Yeah, we have a caller. We have She-Wolf from Florida has a comment on about getting indicted. Sorry about that. I'm a little bit tongue-tied. And you are live. Go ahead with your comment.
Hello. I didn't mean to butt into your conversation.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I just wanted to
go with your comment.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you the reason why you can't get an indictment is because a corporation cannot indict another corporation when they pertain to the same district. Like, you're asking the district's attorney to indict an officer of the law who is also employed by the same district, mm-hmm. meaning that if you have, like, the city of, let me give you an example, like a city of Homestead, we had a kid that was shot 7 times by an officer and killed, and he had a gun on him, but it was unloaded. He just had it in his pants pocket, never pulled it out. And that officer did not get punished at all. But I do know the reason why they don't get punished is because you're asking a corporation to indict another corporation, and they're just not going to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, that absolutely, makes sense. And we thank you for that comment. When you look at, even in the federal government, you look at, okay, is a judge going to basically preside over a prosecutor, being on trial? You're not going to get you're not going to get a conviction. It's laid out just like the federal prosecutors and judges have absolute immunity, so that they don't even have to go to trial, because if they do, then just as the caller was saying, it's going to be proven that they are not going to go against each other.
I'll tell you right now, and I appreciate the caller, but that is absolutely complete nonsense.
It is.
If you say in this country that no one, and that's what you hear the officers, the commanders come out and say, no one's above the law in America. This is a land of laws. Well, the simple fact that I won't indict my fellow worker because we work for the same government, or we work for the same DAs, or whatever you want to call it, is a tragedy in this country. It is a sickness in this country. And that culture has to change. The federal government has to get involved and say, you know what? That may have been once. It's not going to happen again. And until we get tired of that, we will stay in the same state that we are in right now.
Absolutely.
And that doesn't work.
That's right. And the thing is, I mean, you look at time and time again how, you have these police officers come out. And without cell phones with cameras on them, without people recording these things that happen by law enforcement, they always come out with the same story. Why do they have the same story? That I felt my life was threatened. That's the reason that I use lethal force. And we don't take shots to the leg, to the arm. We take body shots. We aim at the biggest part of your body. And so we're going to hit you in the torso, and we're aiming, basically 3 shots to your heart. That's what they're trying to do. But the thing is, they know that their commanding officers, per se, are going to basically hold to that same, that blue blood theme that, hey, you're an officer. All you got to do, use this phrase. I felt my life was threatened. I felt like I was, that I had no other alternative than to use deadly force. And you see time and time again, these law enforcement, these police officers, they get off with making statements like that. It's that easy. They get off just by saying, I felt my life was in danger. When you have a police officer on camera with a man fleeing in the opposite direction, and the police officer, without even giving chase, without even saying, halt or anything, he's not in danger at that point, and he shoots a man in the back 4, 5, 9 times, and you say you felt your life was in danger, then what is your excuse for that, and how does a commanding officer come out and say, I stand with my officer? The action that he took is the same action I would expect anybody on my police force to take. That is sickening. And just like you say, Lamont, it needs to be changed. People need to get out, talk to their local legislatures, and all the way up to the federal government to say, hey, we need reform. We need new laws that are put in place that hold these people accountable. That's the only way it's going to change. That's the only way they're going to get off of it, is if you hold them accountable. Say, if you shoot a man and you do it wrongfully, you're held accountable just as any other member of the public.
If that is different, there is no justice.
That's right.
If that is different, because I'm a cop, I'm a prosecutor, there is no justice. And right now, as we get into conversation tonight, we're going to bring on, they're trying to get all the mothers together, but we do have a very special lady on the phone who's going to join us on the show right now. and that is Gwen Carr Gardner, the mother of the slain Eric Gardner. And Gwen, if I can call you that, how are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I just take it one day at a time.
Well, I want to say to you, Gwen, and can I call you Gwen?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay, and I'll tell you right now, we are honored tonight on this program to talk to you, that your story, that your voice, and the voice of your son may be heard forever as we fight the injustice that took place in his life. And we're going to give you the opportunity. And also, we just now, Ms. Gwen, we're going to be being joined right now with by Lucia Davis McBath. And Lucia, how are you tonight? Lucia?
Hello?
Yes, how are you, Ms. McBath?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Thank you so much for being a part. We're trying to get all you wonderful ladies on the line as a panel on this program. So we'll bring those folks in as they get them. We're trying to get them all on right now. Is it Lucia or Lucia?
It's Lucia, but friends and family always call me Lucy.
Okay, well, I consider you a friend. Can I call you Lucy?
Yeah. Please call me Lucy. Please do.
Lucy, we appreciate that. And Miss Gardner Gwen is also on the line with us. She's the mother of Eric Gardner. I'm sure you're familiar with that story. And both of you ladies are on. So we're going to have four ladies on the panel tonight, and I'm sure you guys will get along just fine, and we will get the word out about what's happened. And we thank you guys for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah, we've all met. I know Lucy.
Yes, okay. We've all met. We were all together in Washington this last week.
Oh, okay. And let's talk a little bit, and I'm going to go to you, Gwen, first. As we talked about the situation with your son, and all of America has seen what happened to him. Your thoughts as we get ready to get into this, and all you ladies share a common thread, the loss of a child. And
that's so true.
And I can't imagine. You folks have gone through, and I want you to get an opportunity to talk to our listeners, Gwen, as an introduction of who you are, what you're about, and what you do now to fight for justice for your son.
Oh, yes. Well, my name is Gwen Carr, and I am the mother of Eric Gardner, and I've been pushing for justice. I've been trying to fight the fight, although there's blocks and obstacles in my way, but I'm going to keep pushing forward because I'm in this for the long run. My son's death, it took a lot out of me. It's a great void in my life. So for now, he no longer has a voice, but his mother does. And she's going to fight the fight. She's going to walk the walk and talk the talk. For as long as she has breath in her body.
Well, that's Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, because this injustice, this system is so unjust. And like I just heard you and the other gentleman saying just a while ago, you know, they're saying that the law is for everyone, but that's not true.
Right. It really isn't. And I commend you, Gwen. Says here your work with some of those mothers is embodied by the Justice Committee, an organization which has just returned from Albany, where they petitioned Governor Cuomo. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing that right. For an executive order to provide
Cuomo.
Is it Cuomo? Okay, an executive to provide their ongoing battle with a special prosecutor. As we again, and when you say to the death. With every ounce of your being, you have a voice for Eric, and nothing could be more respected than that. And I think when people come together, as you ladies have, and I've just been notified that Reverend Wanda Johnson is now also joining us, and let me pause for a moment, Gwen, and welcome, Wanda. How are you doing today? Wanda, are you there? Okay, we'll try to get her here momentarily.
Yes, I am here. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Wanda. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for inviting me to the show.
No, you're very welcome, and we are honored to have all of you special ladies. I don't know if you heard, we do have Miss Gwen Carr Garner, Eric Garner's mother, here on the line with us. We have Lucy Davis McBath. She's also on the line with us, and you have joined us, and we are privileged. We are still trying to get Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton. We're still waiting on her. So we're getting into conversation, and we're going to give Lucy you an opportunity also to share your thoughts, your passion, and your fight for justice for the loss of your son. Talk to our listeners, please.
Well, of course, you know, a lot of what we're dealing with is the way that the laws, the gun laws, are interpreted, and specifically in Trayvon's case, and as well as ours, you know, we're dealing with the stand your ground laws. And having received justice, you know, we're very grateful and very thankful for that. But we never should have had to fight so hard to get that justice. That's the injustice of receiving the justice. We had to fight so hard to prove that, you know, our kids were good kids and that they weren't doing anything wrong. But under the gun laws in this country, which are really very ambiguous and they leave loose interpretation to the person that's actually using their guns, we're going to continue to see these kinds of cases and trials all over the country until we change the laws. So that is where I spend a lot of my time and effort working with the gun laws. I do a lot of testifying around the country whenever particularly background check legislation comes up or stand your ground legislation comes up. I fly to those states and I actually sit before those legislators and I will testify because I want them to see the face of the victim. Because we're not numbers, we're not statistics, we're human beings. Our children are dying in the streets. Our loved ones are dying in the streets over these ambiguous laws that allow people to do what they're doing. And specifically people that have implicit biases about, you know, someone that doesn't look, think, or act like them, they're getting away with murder under these laws. So that is where I spend a lot of my time and emphasis around the country.
Oh, and that's, wow, Lucy, wow. What do you say to that? I mean, understand that your son was 17 years old. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what is so tragic about that is, you know, somebody wanting to not mind their own business. You know, I pull up all the time in a parking lot. I may hear some country western music playing. I may hear some hip-hop playing or some R&B playing. That's not my business. I don't care.
Exactly.
It's not, you understand what I'm saying? The senselessness of these tragedies is over the top for me. And I was looking at your profile here, Lucy. Says you were invited to the White House for unveiling of President Obama's My Brother's Keeper educational initiatives. That in your son's honor, you also started the Walk with Jordan Scholarship Foundation that provides charitable and educational assistance to graduating high school students taking in a path. And it says that you have reached out and made guest appearances at many colleges, including the Harvard Kennedy School and Morehouse College. You've made several appearances on national television, including CNN, MSNBC, Headline News, TV One, shows hosted by Lawrence O'Donnell, Melissa Harris-Perry, Soledad O'Brien, and Anderson Cooper. I tell you, you are getting the word out, and we salute you, Lucy, so much for that. And we're going to get back to all of that, and I'd like to give Wanda an opportunity to share and tell us, Wanda, what is the passion? Of course, again, I said earlier that you three ladies share a common thread, and that's the loss of a child. And when you bring those threads together, you can be a force to make a difference in America. And it sounds like you folks are doing that. And Wanda, give us a little bit of what is driving you for justice as you fight for justice, even after the horrible loss of Oscar being killed. Talk to the people about what drives you to seek justice.
The Oscar's loss was senseless. He should have never been killed. And it drives me to share what has happened with Oscar throughout this country to others, to keep speaking, to others about what has happened, about the injustice that we as a people face so very often. Oscar was senselessly killed, and so because of that, I will continue to share his story. And one of the ways that we have shared his story was by having the movie Fruitvale Station made. It was not only seen in the United States, but also overseas in other countries, to let people know that the injustices that African-American young men face, and they need to not face those injustices, and that we as a people have to work on improving our judicial system along with the way the police our people, and not just our people, but other nationalities of people.
Well, and Wanda, I salute you as well. We do on this show tonight. You know, it is one of those things that are, it's just tragic. And I can't tell you my heart as I did the research and looking into the losses here. I'm so very sorry what has happened. But you have a support here that just calls that we fight for justice every day. And we salute you so much. And we're going to get a little deeper into your stories here momentarily. It looks like that Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton, has joined us. And Sabrina, welcome to AJC Radio. How are you this evening? Sabrina, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Thank you so very much. We are honored to have you on our program tonight. We have been already overtaken with emotion thus far. Joining you tonight on this call and this panel, you guys are now a panel now. We have Gwen Carr Gardner, Eric Gardner's mother. We have Lucy McBath, the mother of Jordan Russell Davis. And we have Reverend Wanda Johnson. She also lost her son, Oscar Grant III. And now you joining us, which, of course, the loss of Trayvon Martin, that whole proceedings. And I'm going to give you an opportunity. That case shook a nation. And my condolences, deep condolences, Ms. Fulton, for what has happened. And I'll give you an opportunity. We know what drives you to fight for justice, and I would have to believe that Trayvon is a very clear view of fighting for that justice. Tell our listeners what is driving you to continue to fight for justice for your son in spite of the fact that he is gone.
A lot of times people see these cases on social media. They see these stories and on the news and things like that, and they think, okay, this is a story, and then the next story comes and the next story comes, but that the part that they really don't catch, the part that people don't quite understand, is that this is not just a case for us. This is our lives. We have to live with this pain on a daily basis, and all the moms that's on the call right now, they understand what I'm talking about, that this pain never goes away. We're never going to fully recover from what has happened to our sons. And so what we have done and what we have committed to is spending the rest of our lives, because there is no other focus for me other than fighting for justice for not only my son, but for other sons and other daughters and young people that have been falling victim of senseless gun violence. And we just have to put things in proper perspective, and we have to continue to talk. We have to continue to fight, and we have to remember that we're never going to give up, because this is our lives.
Well, and I'll tell you what, and can I call you Sabrina?
Absolutely.
Okay, and Sabrina and all you ladies, Sabrina, Wanda, Lucy, Gwen, I sit here tonight outraged, to be honest with you. I have followed the news reports. I have followed this very exclusively, and I think what is so commendable to you ladies is that the drive and the fight that's in you to say it's not enough just to accept the system is what it is. If we sit back and become silent as a result of our grief, we don't honor those that we've lost, have we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important. I think it's commendable what you folks are doing. And it's time that we take a look. as a country that we're in a bad state of mind in this country. And this, what has happened to you folks, you ladies, and I'm going to be honest with you, I consider you ladies heroes. I mean, you folks are heroes. Because how many people hide away and can't deal with the pain because they cannot cope? Something inside of you drove you to continue to fight for justice. And I believe it is the temperature of this country is why it's where it's at right now. And I'm going to just pose our panel here, our other radio hosts. We're going to pose some questions to you folks, and we're going to get involved with this conversation. And we may have some callers that are going to call in that may have some questions for you, may have some comments for you. But I tell you what, we honor you tonight, and nothing less than that, as we let your voice be heard here on AJC Radio. And this question goes first to Lucy. And I understand you actually, if I'm not mistaken, actually spoke before Congress. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
And I was listening to one of your statement, and you said that your father would have been proud and beaming that his daughter was at that moment speaking to Congress. But what shook me to the core was the fact when you said, but once he figured out why I was here, all of that goes away. Can you comment a little bit more about that?
Yes, I'm a definite product of the civil rights movement. My father was Illinois branch president of the NAACP for over 20 years and also served on its executive board. So I can remember as a child, we were following Daddy and my mom, you know, around the country as Daddy gave speeches, and we went to marches and rallies. And I remember the civil rights workers coming to my house as a child, even though I didn't know who they were. I just remember attorneys and I remember signs, you know, I guess picket signs and things of that nature that they would come over, and they were always coming over and kind of debriefing and strategizing. But there again, as a child, I didn't understand what was happening. But in the back seat of the car, you know, we had our crayons and pillows and blankets and potato chips, and you know, we traveled along with my father as much as we possibly could. So to be a product of the civil rights movement and to see my parents so entrenched in that is just it's a part of who I am. It's a part of my legacy. It's a part of my history. But I think, you know, my father, even as proud as he would be of me today, the fact that I became involved in this work, this has come full circle for me simply because I lost my son. That would be extremely disheartening and painful to him, and it would make him feel like everything that he worked so hard for in the civil rights movement to make sure that, you know, his grandchildren could walk down the street without being and living in fear, he would probably basically roll over in his grave if he knew why I was speaking before Congress.
Well, and I'm gonna pose a question. So what would make this easier as well? I'm gonna pose a question. I'm gonna get the comments from each and every one of you right down the line, okay? And this question is for all of you, and then I'm gonna start with Gwen for you first. As you have observed the judicial system, prior to this act happening to your son, did you believe, and this is for all of you, was there a point that you honestly believed that the system was fair, that something, you know, before the horrible injustices begin to unfold, in your case, in the case with your son, Gwen, no indictment comes down for the officer, I mean, what did you feel before about the justice system, and what do you feel now, given, is there hope? And I'll start with you, Gwen, and we'll get answers from all of you here in a moment. Gwen, go ahead.
Okay, before this happened to me, to be truthful, I have never had any encounters with the police. So, you know, I knew it wasn't fair. You know, I've heard and I've seen what has been happening, but truthfully, it bothered me, but I never took any action. I'm ashamed to say. But after this tragic happened to me, it just filled me with just, first of all, I was filled with sorrow. I was filled with, oh, no, they didn't do this to me. They didn't take my son away from me. And I was, you know, first when it happened, I was just out of it. I just didn't know what to do. But, you know, after I collected myself and, you know, got to thinking and got to praying, I said, no, I can't just lay here and cry and grieve myself to death. I got to get up. I got to make some moves. You know, so I said, you know what, Glenn, you get up from here. You go and you change. You take your sorrow and turn it into a strategy. You take your mourning and you change it into a movement. Your pain into some positive energy. And that's what I'm doing now. And I know we did not get an indictment, which I don't know how. It, you know, we didn't. We had a full-length video. We had two medical examiners that ruled my son's death a homicide. One of the medical examiners was a police forensic. And we still didn't get an indictment. Where is the justice? Now I know that the justice system is so unfair, so unbalanced. And, you know, I have to fight. I don't care if it takes forever for myself, for my son, for other people, because there are other mothers that are feeling the same pain that I'm feeling. They didn't get high profile on their cases, but I will stand with them. I will be their voice. And anything they need me to do, any place they need me to speak out, I will be there.
Well, we salute you. And Wanda, before and after, your thoughts about this system, what were your thoughts at that time?
My thoughts have always been that the judicial system is not a balanced scale, that the disproportionate of African Americans have always been into prison and so and always have been given a sentence much higher than other nationalities. So I've always felt that that the judicial system needs some work. And even after when my son's, the person who killed my son, he was found guilty for the first time in California history. A police officer was charged. He was charged with involuntary manslaughter and also a gun enhancement charge. But because the attorney, because the judge said that he had given the jurors the wrong instructions, he threw out the gun enhancement charge. And then he informed us that, you know, we should have been happy that Obama was in office. And so then he told me.
Wanda, I got to make sure I heard you correctly, and I apologize for the interruption. Did you say the judge made the statement, you ought to be thankful? Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, we ought to be happy that, yes, that President Obama was in office. We've come a long way.
Wow.
And so we kind of, as a family, knew that we weren't going to be given the verdict or given the sentence that we should have been given. He then went on to, as he sentenced the officer, he went on to give him, you know, time for good behavior and other time off. So the officer only ended up serving 11 months in a county jail for killing my son. And I thought about so many others, Michael Vick, who went to prison for those years for dog mauling. And I thought about, you know, other people who have went to jail for, and they have went to prison for committing crimes less than killing a person. And they receiving more time than that. So do I think, what do I think about the judicial system? I think that the judicial system needs to be revamped. Especially when it comes to having the persecutor defend the family who have lost a loved one by the hands of police. I look at that as a conflict of interest because they have spent so much time together that it's kind of hard to even try to try that person whom you may have a familiar relationship with honestly. And so I think that our judicial system works needs a great deal of work.
Oh, absolutely. And Sabrina, your situation, and I'm coming to you, Lucy, hang in there with me. Sabrina, your situation, what I was talking about today, is that the 911 call, they told him point blank, do not do that. When they were asked to follow, he asked, are you following this young man? He said, do not follow him. How in the world, and I'm going to let you comment on my question, but I want to just phrase this. How in the world do you follow a man, a young boy, with Skittles and some iced tea, walking and minding his own business? You pursue him, and then you want to claim, I felt in danger of my life, so it was self-defense. You followed this young boy. When you hear that, and I'm sure you've been asked that question 1,000 times, did you believe at least at one time in this country that justice prevailed? I know you can't believe that it does now. Please give us your thoughts on that.
My thoughts are Trayvon was absolutely minding his own business. Trayvon was in a community that he was unfamiliar with, but he knew where he was going, and he was walking back to the house where he came from. And he simply walked to the store to get something to drink and some candy. And this person decided, okay, I am going to profile you. It's very simple. It's crystal clear. I mean, other than a video, I really don't know how people got it all twisted and everything and wanted to make Trayvon out of being a bad guy. But that's usually what they do when somebody is being murdered that is African-American. Then they blame the victim. But Trayvon was absolutely minding his own business. He was on the phone with a young lady from Miami. He was unarmed. This person followed, chased, and pursued him. Yeah. Trayvon actually ran at some point. It came out in court that he actually ran at some point and must have hid or something, and this guy still followed him with a loaded gun, and he knew he had a loaded gun.
Yeah.
And at that particular time, my son, I feel, was standing his ground. He was fighting for his life. And at the time that the shots went off, my son, Trayvon Martin, was yelling for help. And still, this murderer shot my son. There's nowhere in the world you can convince me that you're holding a loaded gun and you yelling for help. I absolutely don't believe that. And I don't think anybody believes that. But that's what they do to try to justify the actions of somebody that murdered a 17-year-old kid. That wasn't asking for any confrontation, was just simply walking back to a house.
And you know, that is what is twisted with the American justice system, because you look at the entire story of Trayvon Martin and the you know, the other deaths by the hand of law enforcement. That's one thing, but at least those give you some level of, okay, can they try to twist the story? Can they try to use some type of arbitration? They say, yeah, this officer fell in danger for his life. They try to throw something in the mix that says, okay, this is because he's a law enforcement. It doesn't work. I mean, it's still transparent, and how they get away with it is sickening. But then to have somebody like George Zimmerman, a man on the street, to follow somebody, chase them down, be told by the 911 operator, we do not need you to follow this young man around. You need to back off. And for him to get out of his car with a loaded weapon to cobble, I mean, this is an issue where you try to confront somebody, you get to the point where, you know, Trayvon is fighting for his life. Zimmerman is just, I mean, he's too much of a coward, and he chases Trayvon down and then shoots him in cold blood, and a jury says that this is self-defense on a man with a gun in his hand? How does that ever make sense in America? That is third world country. That is KGB. That is
the, I mean, that is some dictatorship where they say, okay, you're above the law because of who you are or who your family might be or something like that. But for that to be able to happen and the people of America not be outraged, it shows the state of our country. It shows that right down the middle, right down race lines, that everything is still split, that nothing has changed from the 50s and the 60s and the civil rights movement, that a black life should matter as much as a white life, but it does not. And it is sickening, and it's heart-wrenching. And Sabrina, to hear you talk about it, you know that this still, you know, just grips you with pain even until this day. And we commend you for the stand that you take and for continuing to spread the message.
And all you ladies are, again, are heroes. And Lucy, I'll let you get the last word on this before we go to break. Your thoughts before this happened to you and after? Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, most definitely we were just extremely hurt by Trayvon's murder. And we had discussions. I remember the day that I stood in my bedroom discussing what happened with Trayvon with Jordan. And I remember distinctly Jordan saying, "Mom, he wasn't doing nothing. He wasn't doing anything. You know, why did he get murdered? You know," and I remember saying to him, "You know, baby, you have got to be so careful that simply because of the color of your skin and that you are a black male, that you will be perceived differently by people in this country. You know, you may not be valued as a human being. You may not be valued as a black man. You have got to be careful where you walk, who you talk to, what you do." And the biggest thing I remember saying to him all is that, "And if you are ever in a confrontation with anyone, stand down, back off, because nowadays people will not have, you know, just civil conversations or arguments with you. They will take out a gun and shoot you." And I remember saying that to him, and Jordan with his 16-year-old bravado at that time, "No, nobody's going to shoot me down. Nobody, I can take care of myself. I'm going to be okay." But I remember that day so vividly because it was just basically I was speaking into existence my own son's destiny. And it's just so disheartening now that, you know, it's not just Trayvon, it's not just Jordan, it's not just Oscar Graham, it's not just Michael Brown, it's not just Eric Garner. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And there's so many other people being gunned down every single day, and nobody knows who they are except the communities that they lived in. Nobody knows who these people are except the family members and the loved ones that are devastated and left to live on after they're gone. And our people are dying in the streets senselessly for no reason other than being black. And I applaud every mother on the phone with me and the mothers that are still in the trenches fighting and we don't even know who they are. I applaud them because we have to move forward. We have to get this country to see and understand that we matter, that we have a right to exist and live in this country freely without being gunned down. And the systemic racism and the systemic violence, what we're dealing with now is no different than what we were dealing with in the 60s, the 50s, and the 40s with the civil rights movement. It is still civil rights, and we still have to continue to fight this fight.
Absolutely, and I have a question for you. We got a caller that wants to actually talk to you, ladies. And Cliff, who's on the line?
Yes, we have Rose on the line. Has a comment. You're live. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. As I sit here and listen to these mothers, and I'm a mother as well, my heart just aches inside. It is so unbelievable. This is not a tragedy that you outlive. You live with it for the rest of your life. I never had a son who was shot by police or even some other person. I lost my son, and a statement was made one day to me that going to prison is like dying with your eyes wide open. All these years, I never believed that all this type of stuff that we're seeing now could possibly be happening. And we say, well, we're well past that. Racism in this country is as great now as it ever was, and that's a tragedy, considering all the people who have given their lives. I watched the Trayvon Martin trial. I watched everything. All the other ladies, I didn't know a lot about, but that one was recent. And then Mr. Garner, and then Michael Brown. I am telling you, I thought, am I going to turn my TV on again? And there's another black man, black boy that they have killed. It got to the place you think, when is this madness going to stop? That's why I commend the mothers for coming together, joining forces, because numbers is strength. Numbers with people fighting together is unity. That's how you get something accomplished in this country. And I watch this thing, and I'm thinking every day of my life, how much more can you do to a race of people? And the laws endorse them. They sent that man who killed Trayvon, I don't even like to call his name. They sent him up, I, at one point it was $500,000. You know what they did? They said to the man that killed Trayvon Martin, we want to reward you for getting rid of that black boy. Other people, I don't know how many other people have been given money, and that police officer who killed Michael Brown, he got, I know at one point it was over $400,000. Well, you know what they say? Keep killing them and you'll get paid for it.
Yes.
It makes me sick to my stomach. How in the world can you come back with a not guilty verdict on Trayvon Martin? I cannot get with that for nothing. When that pig should have been home somewhere instead of tracking that young boy down, that's not gonna he look like he's up to something. You tell me, how does he look like he's up to something? Who made you a psychologist? Just because he's walking and got a little drink in his hand and some Skittles, and I resent these people that every time they kill a black man in this country, they always go back and try to find some kind of little thing they did. They had done drugs one time. So what the white was doing too, and they're still out there doing their thing. I think it is horrible that you would do this to these parents after their children have been killed, violently murdered. Then you come out talking about any mistakes they may have made. They're the person on this planet. All of our kids make mistakes. But they put my son-in-law, in prison, and four other men that I'm a pastor of a church in Colorado Springs. They put all the men in prison that were innocent. We taught our kids that when we first heard about it, before we became a victim of this system, that if you got, you know, evidence that you didn't do anything wrong, that's all you need. These were IT executives, professionals, and you know what? I know I can go to the prison to see my son and see these other five guys. You'll never see your son again. That is a tragedy. As a mother, my heart hurts for you. I pray that God would give you the strength to continue to fight. They took my daughter away from me and put her in prison, never broke the law, never did nothing wrong. The most crooked, corrupt judge that I've ever seen in my life. It makes me sick when I think about it, because they wanted our six guys to take a plea deal. They said, we didn't do nothing wrong. We're not pleading to anything. They put my daughter in prison to try to make them do a plea deal. And she said, Mama, you know what? I would do it all over again. I don't want them to bow to it. I commend you mothers with everything within me. You're in my prayers. I can't imagine your pain. I lost a daughter that was 29 years old, so I know what it feels like to lose a child, even though she died of natural causes. But to die a violent death like this. And then he sit in the courtroom when Trayvon's trial is, the trial is going on about Trayvon. He sits there with a smirky look on his face as if, you know, I'm the right fella, I'll get away with it. I resent it in everything in my soul to see this kind of stuff. And then they tell this crap about the nobody, everybody, there's nobody above the law. There's people all over this nation that is above the law. They commit crimes, they kill people, they murder people, do all this stuff. They don't get put in prison. They don't get anything of the sort. Our guys are working hard to build software that would protect our country. And their fathers, my husband had served in the military for 20 plus years, and then these men, they were military people who had served their country. And this kind of treatment, my son said to me when I went to the prison, he said, "Mama, I tried to do something good to help the country, and is this my thanks? You put me in prison for 11 years." I'm telling you, this is a sick country, but I thank you for standing up and fighting. My heart is with you. If you ever need anybody else helping to get the news out and the voices out there, please count on Pastor Rose Banks. I will do anything that I can do within my power to say, no, we need to cry loud in this country. We need to really let it out, because if you go somewhere and grieve, even though we have a right to grieve, but if we grieve, they continue to kill more and more and more people. We have to stand up as black women in this country and say, it's not okay for you to kill my son. And then they tell the story about all lives matter. Yeah, they do, except you only kill the black ones. So all lives, we want black people's lives to matter. Our sons and our daughters, that you don't put them in prison. One out of every three males born in this country will end up going to prison before he ever cries the first time, before he ever gets to kindergarten, before he ever does anything, he's already doomed to be put in prison. This is a sick country. We better cry out like we never did before. I commend you. I wish I was there with you. I put my arms around you and say I love you, and our whole family is standing with you to support you, because the pain that you feel, only God could comprehend and understand what's in you, how that ripped your heart apart. And I just want you to know, we are praying for you. We will continue to pray for you and pray that God will help our voices to get louder and louder. We need as many mothers as all over this country who've lost sons and daughters. We need them to join forces and become a force in this country to say, we're not going to sit back and let you keep killing our kids. We're not going to do it. We're not going to let you send them to prison when they didn't do anything. This is a horrible situation. So I am in the boat with you, understanding what it means to be crushed and put away, and I watched my sons work themselves to death and got that software ready for Homeland Security, New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, and they went and told all those people don't do business with them, and then get an indictment on them based on lies from an FBI agent. This thing is incomprehensible. So believe me, I understand your pain. I sat in my chair tonight waiting for this moment that I could come on the air and say to you, may God forever give you strength to continue to fight. Surely you get tired. Surely you miss your son. And I can't even imagine that. And when you got the news that he was dead, I just can't imagine it. So please know we're with you, and thank you for coming on Just Cause Radio. We appreciate it for you taking your time out. This is part of the fight. God bless you. We love you and appreciate you. Thank you for taking my call.
We thank you so much.
I just want to say thank you for praying for us and continue to pray for us and continue to lift us up, and because we are going through some struggles, and we have our good days and we have our bad days. All of us,
yes,
from this same fight. But I thank God for you, and I thank God for people like you that's not afraid to stand up and stand out. And even though we might not know the reason why our sons were selected and the reason why this happened at such a time as this, and the country is so concerned with foreign countries when we have a crisis going on right here. So we just have to make sure that we connect with each other, that we unite with each other, and that's what's strengthening us, is to know that I can call on another mother, and she is going through the same things that I'm going through, and she can pray with me and talk with me and cry with me and hug with me, and I have somebody that's going through it. And it makes a big difference to know that we are not alone. So continue. Please continue just to lift us up, and I thank God for you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Someone was trying to make a comment. Go ahead.
So who was trying to make a comment?
Go ahead. It was you, Pastor.
Yes. I just wanted to tell you that I appreciate you and these women. It's like having close friends that you never met. And believe me, we will not stop praying, because if prayer don't get it done, nothing will get it done. It takes God to bring stuff back and really give us our life back the way we want it. You can't have Trayvon, and other men can't have their sons back. And Mr. God, I thought, my God, what are you doing to that man? We're sitting here watching. You're just being unbelievable. Thank you so much, honey, for being on here. And if you ever need to call on me, please feel free to ask them for my own home number at any time, day or night, because I know sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night, it's like, God, if I only had somebody to talk to, if I could just let out what I'm feeling inside, the pain hurts so bad. But when you couldn't have somebody there who said, I understand, I know which how you feel, it means everything. We can be strength to each other. And let's fight a good fight. We can fight a good fight, and we can win. No matter what anybody says, we can win.
So true, so true. Yeah, this is Gwen Carr, Eric Garner's mother. I thank you so much for that. And it's all because of God that I'm still standing strong. I put him first in my life. And sometimes when tragics happen to us, we question God. But I know we shouldn't question God. But I still lean on his everlasting love, because God told us that vengeance is mine. And I believe that. If we never know that those criminals, you know, is punished, we know that there is still a God. And we thank God for people like you, and keep praying for us, and we want to keep praying for each other.
Yes, yes. Thank you, honey. Thank you. We love you, and may God forever bless you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you
too.
Thank you so much.
Well, ladies, wow. That's Pastor Rose Banks, Colorado Springs Fellowship Church in Colorado Springs. And ladies, how much time do you have left with us? We would not want to impose in any way on your time. Do you guys want to come back with us on the other side of this break? Or do you guys have obligations to get to?
I have to. I'm in Manhattan, so I have to go and meet my husband on the other side of Brooklyn. So I thought I would be
there. Okay.
So I'll probably have to leave the call, but I'm just so interested. I would be willing to come back at another time.
No problem. That's Gwen, right?
Yes, this is Gwen.
All right, Gwen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be in contact with you in regards to Pastor Rose Banks and her invitation to call her. She is a warrior, one with a sincere heart. We will have her number given to you, and she means that. I believe.
Oh, I know she does. I believe she does.
So we're going to do that. And so if you want to hang on the line, Gwen, they're going to give that phone number to you. Can you hang on the line? They're going to give you that phone number as we go to break.
Sure.
Stay on the line.
Sure.
They'll give you that phone number. Lucy, can you
go
back with me?
Yeah, I have to go too as well.
Okay,
so
no worries.
I'm so sorry.
No. Please don't apologize. And we're just going to get an account. And Sabrina, are you able to come back, or are you needing to wrap it up as well?
You get me.
Huh?
I said you have me. I'm on the call.
Okay, and Wanda?
I'm on the call as well.
Okay, folks, we will be right back. Gwen and Lucy, such a pleasure.
Yes.
We will be
thank
back.
You, so much.
You guys have inspired us tonight, and you've gained a friend and a ally in Pastor Rose Banks.
Thank you.
Also,
thank you so much. We're indebted to so many people in the country that we will never even meet.
Yes, that is so true.
And we're going to reach out to you some other things that are going on that may be an opportunity to get your message out further. We'll explain that as well as we get back in contact with you, okay?
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, and our prayers and thoughts are with you and your families. Wanda, God bless you. And Sabrina, we're coming right back on the other side of this break. Ladies and gentlemen of America, this is a Just Cause. As we have honored the heroes, as we remember the victims whose lives matter. We have had Gwen Carr Garner, Lucy McBath, Reverend Wanda Johnson, and also Sabrina Fulton, the mothers, and I call them heroes of our nation. We're coming right back with Reverend Wanda Johnson and Trayvon Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton. And stay with us here on AJC Radio as we search for justice and bring the message of justice around the world. Lucy, you can stay on the line and get Pastor Banks' personal phone number as well. That'll be provided for you as well. We'll be right back.
Do you know anyone who's been sent to prison who's innocent? The United States is experiencing record numbers of exonerations in cases where people were wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit. If you believe that no one should be sent to prison for crimes they didn't commit, there is something that you can do today. By remembering A Just Cause with a monthly, annual, or one-time donation, you can help in the fight against wrongful convictions. Call A Just Cause at 855-529-4252. Or visit a-justcause.com and click the donate button. A Just Cause is a 501c3. Wrongful convictions are wrong. Let's be the voice of those who can't speak from behind the wall.
A BART police officer who shot and killed a man.
When I first saw the Oscar Grant footage, like a lot of people here in Oakland, I was outraged.
As soon as I heard about it and I went online and I seen what had happened, tears came down my eyes.
It was something that was very alarming as a police officer and as a citizen of Oakland.
It was like such a blatant murder.
You have a city in trauma. Anyone that's seen that and looks at it is in trauma.
My hope is that people will express their concern with police brutality, but they will do so in constructive ways that don't include violence.
We cannot perpetrate this cycle of harm and violence in this community.
Because we do have to live here and they terrorize the city and it's only going to make it worse for us.
They killed our young black brothers.
You can protest, you can try to make a change, but there is a positive way you can do it.
And make sure we let the police know and that we're aware that stuff ain't right out here. We're trying to fix it.
In a way that is about using your voice for justice
and making Oakland a safer place for everyone to live and get along as one.
Violence is not just
violence is not justice.
Violence is not justice.
Violence is not justice.
We know you care. Now it's time. Time to change the face of justice.
Did you know that minority and youth participation in juries is extremely low to non-existent?
The incidence of youth and minority offenders faced with trials have exploded.
Youth and minorities are not being represented as they should be.
We must represent for people to get fair trials.
If you acquire a state ID or driver's license, it allows you to register to vote, and it allows you to become eligible for jury service.
If you're 18, a U.S. citizen with a state ID or driver's license, and registered to vote,
you're eligible to be called for jury duty.
If called and selected, make it your duty to serve.
We can't get justice without you.
Change.
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 Change
the face of justice.
Change.
check your local county or state jury service website for further details.
I'm a mother.
I'm a father.
I'm a sister.
A registered nurse. I serve my country in the United States military.
I'm your neighbor.
I sit next to you at church.
And my child was
arrested,
held in custody,
questioned without my knowledge,
exposed to violence,
witnessed to rape,
placed in solitary confinement,
unable to call or see me,
shackled to a wall,
beaten,
sentenced as an adult at age 17,
sentenced as an adult at age 16,
sentenced as an adult at age 15.
We felt lost,
isolated,
ostracized,
misjudged,
terrified.
And in the absence of all hope, my child took his own life.
And then I found the Alliance for Youth Justice. They gave me the support and resources to get through one of the most difficult times in my life.
Now I know I'm not alone.
And neither are you.
Now we have a voice.
Now we have power.
In numbers.
In numbers.
In numbers.
We can make a difference.
There are approximately 2 million children in the juvenile and criminal justice system in this country. These are the faces of those families. If you are the family member of a child who has been in the justice system, or if you are someone who supports this movement and is ready to make a difference, visit the Campaign for Youth Justice at www.campaignforyouthjustice.org.
For the first time since George Zimmerman was found not guilty of murdering their son, Trayvon Martin's parents are speaking publicly this morning about the verdict. Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin are with us, along with their attorney, Benjamin Crump. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, it ought to be said that among all these questions, everybody understands, most importantly, the loss of your son. And you have to answer these questions. I mean, you don't have to, but it's part of a process that you are going through. What is it you most want us to understand before we talk about the particulars of this verdict?
I want American to know that Trayvon was a fun-loving child. He was our child. We miss him dearly. Just to have your child's life taken away from you like that, it hurts. And it's a process that will take a long time to start the recovery from.
And how are you feeling, Sabrina, after the verdict?
I was in a bit of shock. I thought surely that he would be found guilty of second-degree murder, manslaughter at the least, but I just knew that they would see that this was a teenager just trying to get home. This was no burglar. This was somebody's son that was trying to get home.
You were stunned by the verdict.
I was stunned. Absolutely. I couldn't believe it.
You believe that this was racial profiling, and this happened because of that?
We didn't know details about the case. We knew some of them, but some of the details came out in the courtroom as far as previous 911 calls. And I think it was, you know, obvious that it was a black person, a black young person that they were looking for. But Trayvon simply was not that person. Trayvon was not a burglar. He wasn't doing anything wrong. He simply went to the store and was headed back home. And for somebody to look at him and perceive him to be a burglar, that is the problem that initiated everything.
Did you hear that juror who spoke out with Anderson Cooper? And what did you think when you heard her say that she believes that Trayvon played a huge role in his own death?
I don't think she knows Trayvon. Trayvon is not a confrontational person. So instead of placing the blame on the teenager, we need to place the blame on the responsible adult.
And there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to AJC Radio, where tonight we have shined the light on heroes, and they are mothers of the victims who we have lost. Victims who are their children. And tonight we have had the privilege to have Sabrina Fulton, the mother of Trayvon Martin, Reverend Wanda Johnson, the mother of Oscar Grant III, Lucy Davis McBath, the mother of 17-year-old Jordan Russell Davis, and, of course, Gwen Carr Garner, the mother of Eric Garner, who was murdered in New York City. Welcome back. I'm Lamont Banks, along with Charlisa Stewart, Cliff Stewart, and Jeanette Williams. As we have had an opportunity, and I am touched, moved, every type of emotion you can imagine is shaking through this studio tonight. And Miss Gardner and Miss McBath had to leave us, but we still are privileged in this closing segment to have Sabrina Fulton, Trayvon Martin's mother, and the Reverend Wanda Johnson still with us. Are you ladies there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you, ladies, for spending the time with us. And Wanda, I got a question for you, and I'm going to come to you here in a moment because I'm going to get your comments on that interview that Sabrina just did. Sabrina, when you hear that interview, what goes through your mind as somebody makes a statement that Trayvon Martin is responsible in part for his own death? That is the most insane thing that could come out of a person's mouth. When you hear that, does that serve as a driving force to make you even fight harder?
I can't say that that particular statement does. It just shows that some people are insensitive. It shows the deep-rooted hate that prevails in this country, and how somebody, because of the color of their skin, can racially profile someone, can follow them, chase them, pursue them, and almost hunt them down and shoot them because of the color of their skin, and then justify it by saying, I was standing my ground. I was defending myself. You were defending yourself against a 17-year-old with no weapon, and this man was 28 years old with a loaded gun, ready to murder someone. And so for a long time, I couldn't even say the word murder. I couldn't even say that because I just refused to believe that we were still living in a country that still allowed this to happen. We allowed this to happen way back from when Emmett Till was murdered. And then still at during the time that Trayvon was murdered in 2012, we were still facing challenges dealing with racial profiling and the injustice that the system has caused among black lives. And so sure. I try to focus on my son. I try to focus on my boys because, you know, I have an older son that's 24 years old, just graduated from college, and I try to keep my mind focused on what I need to focus on. I have heard a lot of things, but I don't let that drive my focus. My focus is doing what I need to do for myself, doing what I need to do for my family, doing what I need to do for my boys. And so I refuse to let somebody, you know, somebody's comment take my focus off my drive.
Oh, no, and that's definitely commendable, Sabrina. And the question for you, Wanda, says here that former BART officer Johannes cried in open court as he described shooting your son as he lay face down on the train platform. The 33-year-old claims he mistakenly used his service revolver when he wanted to grab a taser. Now, I don't have to be a genius to understand how light a taser is and how heavy a revolver is. When you hear that type of explanation, tell me your thoughts on that. I'm outraged when I hear something. Do you honestly think people don't believe that? Go ahead.
That was his fabrication. His first thing was he thought he was going for a gun when Oscar was clearly laying on the platform on his stomach with his hands behind his back. When he got up, when Johannes Mazzoli got up and shot him in the back and killed him, that didn't work when he said he thought he had a gun, so he tried to say he was resisting arrest. And then he finally got a new attorney, and his last statement was that he went for his, he meant to go for his taser instead of his gun. To me, all that was a lie. My son's last picture of that officer was that officer knowing where his taser was because he had pointed it at the youth that was on the platform. And so it's very disheartening how this judicial system has set up a set of lies to have the officers say to try to convince the public that that person, the shooting was justifiable. It is just horrible. They have done that in so many different cases to try to convince people to believe that the person who was killed, the killing was justifiable. And so I don't believe it, and I never will believe it. Even the officer on his paper that he wrote with the first attorney that he had did not say that he used his taser instead of his gun. He said he released his revolver. So he knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay, and we are coming to the end of this show. And Sabrina and Wanda, I cannot tell you how close in heart that we feel to you tonight. And as Pastor Rose Banks alluded to, you've found a friend tonight in AJC, a Just Cause, as well as Pastor Rose Banks, pastor of Colorado Springs Fellowship here in Colorado Springs. You're ever in the area, you have an ally and a warrior. When she says she's praying, you can bank on it. And we are so touched and honored that you folks took time tonight to be a part of this show with what you're doing. And we're with you. We're going to be reaching out to you, ladies, regarding another thing that's going on, and we'll get into that offline. But thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for letting your voice be lifted and let it be heard. And know that our hearts and our prayers are with you every step of the way, and that we're here for you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for the invite. And hello, Sabrina, since I didn't get to say it earlier.
How are you doing? I just want to say thank you as well. I want to say thank you to the all the AJC radio listeners and the online listeners. And I just thank God for everybody who just stood in support with us and continue to support us and just continue to lift us up.
And we will definitely do that. Stay on the line. We're going to give you Pastor Rose Banks, her number. And ladies, please, it is a valuable asset to be able to call a woman that has a heart for people and a heart for God. Please take her up on her offer and call her anytime. She means that from the bottom of her heart, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. You guys be safe out there tonight.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We have been graced tonight and blessed tonight to talk to the heroes of America. And these are the mothers of the senseless slayings of their children. Lucy Davis McBeth, Reverend Wanda Johnson, Sabrina Fulton, and Gwen Carr Garner, who have taken time tonight to share their story. And Lisa Cliff Jeanette, as we close another show, I'm overwhelmed with not only Pastor Banks' plea and reaching out, but also the hearts of these mothers. Lisa, as we do our closing thoughts here, how do we wrap this up?
Well, Lamont, it's been a very moving show, and I think we were honored to have these ladies on here with us this evening, and their stories are enough to break your heart.
Yeah.
It's enough to make you, I mean, it messes with your, pretty much messes with the rest of your day because you're thinking about what these women are going through. And thinking about, I remember when I had to have a talk with my son, and the fact when I thought about it, I thought I shouldn't be having to talk to my son about how to act and what to do if a policeman approaches you. That shouldn't be something that I have to do, because that's not what our policemen are supposed to be out there for. They're there to protect and to serve. And we should live in a society where people can just go on about their lives and not have to worry that somebody may shoot me in the back or give me a dozen warning shots because I walked by and they didn't like the way I looked when I walked by. That should not be the state of this country. That should not be the way our citizens are living. It shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't have mothers heartbroken because their children have been killed for no reason. It's not the way America's supposed to be. We're supposed to be this great land of the free. There's no freedom here. When you have to talk to your children, explain to them, be careful what you do. Be careful how you walk and what you say. Watch what you do because you might get 8 warning shots in the back.
Yeah.
That should not be the case. It just shouldn't be like that.
It shouldn't be. And, Cliff, you're a father. What do you do to your son? How hard is it, again, as we close this show tonight, to comment to your son and say, it's a real world and it's dangerous out there?
Well, I think the most difficult part is because, you know, where I grew up with the police all the time, and I just grew up that way. I knew, hey, you know, look out for the police. That was just the neighborhood I grew up in. That was just a part of it. Well, I, you know, ensure that my son doesn't have to go through that and try to do the things that I need to do to ensure that he doesn't have to live in a neighborhood like that, where, you know, my thought was never that a conversation like that would have to be had with him, with where he grew up. But you look at it and you realize it doesn't matter. In America, any black man, any black boy, any black person can end up becoming a victim of law enforcement for no reason. And just like Ms. Johnson said about her son, I mean, they will come up with a story for why they shot you.
Absolutely.
In the back. How does a man lay face down on a train track and the police officer say, I thought he was going for his gun, and so I shot him in the back?
That makes a lot of sense. It's insane. And Jeanette, your closing comments as you have heard this show tonight.
It's definitely been an emotional ride tonight. I tell you that, LaVont. I have an appreciation and a deeper appreciation for these women. What Lucy was saying about the stand your ground law and that loose interpretation and how she's fighting, I commend her for that, because unloading your gun because you don't like the volume of my music, that's not standing your ground. They were no threat. I mean, the injustice is just beyond words, and I appreciate what all of them had to say, because the judicial system definitely needs reform.
No, absolutely, and thank you, Jeanette, for that. And folks, Cliff, unconventional way of closing this show, we sent a very special invitation to mothers, fathers, families who have suffered the loss of a child at the hand of police and senseless killings that happen across this country. We extend a personal invitation to you to contact the Just Cause immediately, as we will start a campaign to come together in unity to help you and others and countless millions who suffer at the hand of injustice. You can go to a-justcause.com. You can contact us there. Also, you can go to ajcradio.com. The archives of this program will be listed there as well. And please give us a phone call. Reach out to us via email, Facebook, Twitter. We will be there. And we extend that invitation as we start a campaign for unity, and that these lives do matter. Please contact the Just Cause right away as we continue to bring the message of justice around the world. Cliff?
Yes, we want to again say thank you to all of our guests, Reverend Wanda Johnson, Sabrina Fulton, Lucy Davis McBath, and Ms. Gwen Carr Garner. We appreciate you guys taking time out of your evening, coming on to the show, and giving us your heartfelt feelings about the loss of your sons and the state of justice in America today. And we appreciate it. We also want to say thank you to all of our callers, all of your comments, everyone in the chat room, all of your comments and questions there. We do appreciate the interactivity that you guys expressed there. Also, we want to say thank you to our production team. We have K&D Productions, Captain Kyle, and Dustin Jackson helping out Ill Skills Girl, who's back off hiatus, back with us in the studio. We appreciate you guys. Also, we want to say thank you to our production support team. They bring us accurate and up-to-date information so that we can pass that over to you. And also to the truth, we know that that you are out there, and as always, we do appreciate your voice.
Okay, and thank you for that, Cliff. Ladies and gentlemen, we just gave a special invitation to contact the Just Cause. If you are a victim of police brutality, you have lost someone that has passed away, we start a campaign at a Just Cause to come together and unite as one as we fight injustice. If you have suffered what you have heard tonight, and perhaps your voice is silent, AJC Radio and a Just Cause will lift your voice. Please call us at 855-529-4252. That's 855-529-4252. As we search for justice, call right away. And again, you can go to a-justcause.com and ajcradio.com. To all of America, we say good night. God bless you.
For Complex News, I'm Jinx with a breaking news report. The New York Police Department cop who killed Staten Island resident Eric Garner will not be indicted. A grand jury ruled today. The cop, Daniel Pantaleo, was reported on July 17th arresting Garner for selling illegal cigarettes on the street. Garner, father of six, who was 43 at the time of his death, was put into an illegal chokehold and held on the ground by multiple NYPD officers. Garner went into cardiac arrest and died at the site of the confrontation. His death was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner's office. Garner's death became the subject of national attention after video was published by the New York Daily News showing the entire incident happening. According to multiple news outlets, potential charges against Pantaleo included criminally negligent homicide, manslaughter, or reckless endangerment. This is not the first time Pantaleo has found himself in trouble, as it's been reported that the cop, who was pulled off the street in the wake of Garner's death, had been the subject of two policing-related lawsuits prior to this. Like so many other cities around the nation, New York recently found itself a hotspot of protest activity after a grand jury ruled in Missouri not to indict Darren Wilson, the St. Louis County police officer who killed unarmed 18-year-old Michael Brown in a confrontation. This grand jury's ruling will no doubt lead to a new round of protests, which NYPD Commissioner Bill Braddon told reporters he was prepared for, explaining, "We've had quite a bit of time to prepare for the events that will unfold here over the next several days. This is a department that is very well experienced in dealing with demonstrations of all sizes. We here at Complex will continue to cover this story as it develops."
There are major developments tonight in the case of a neighborhood watch captain in Florida who shot and killed an unarmed 17-year-old. The U.S. Justice Department has now opened a civil rights investigation, and the local prosecutor has convened a grand jury to consider criminal charges. Justice correspondent Bob Orr has the latest.
In the 3 weeks since Trayvon Martin was killed inside this gated Florida community, Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman has maintained he shot Martin in self-defense. But attorney Benjamin Crump, who represents Martin's family, says the unarmed teenager was targeted because of his race.
"Arrest George Zimmerman for the killing of Trayvon Martin in cold blood today."
Crump said on the night of the shooting, Martin was heading home from the store and on the phone with his girlfriend. In a telephone interview, the young woman told Crump she listened as Martin was suddenly confronted by a stranger.
"She was on the phone with me. And I'm not understanding what you're going around here."
The girlfriend said she urged Martin to run away, and he responded he would walk fast. At around the same time, Zimmerman also made a call to the Sanford, Florida police to report a suspicious person in his neighborhood.
"He's got his hand in his waistband. And he's a black male."
"Are you following him?"
"Yeah."
"Okay, we don't need you to do that."
What happened next is the critical question. A law enforcement source says Zimmerman told police he began retreating to his car and only fired his weapon after Martin jumped him from behind. Zimmerman has a license to carry a gun, and Florida law allows people to use lethal force in self-defense. But Crump insists Zimmerman was the aggressor. And records show Zimmerman has been a frequent caller to police, with 46 calls in the last year, often reporting African Americans. Now, Tom Perez, who heads the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division, says the government will determine if a hate crime may have occurred.
"Good morning, Chairman Durbin and honored members of the subcommittee.
My name is Lucia Holman McBath, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak before this great institution today. I was raised in a family steeped in justice and confident in the triumphant goodness of humanity. My mother was a registered nurse, and my father, who served in the U.S. Army Dental Corps, was also for over 20 years president of the NAACP for the state of Illinois. He worked actively with President Lyndon Baines Johnson in the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. If he could see me here today, testifying in front of the United States Senate, he would be beaming with pride and amazed at how far his daughter had come until he came to understand what brought me here. I appear before you because my son Jordan was shot and killed last November while sitting in the back seat of a friend's car listening to loud music. The man who killed him opened fire on four unarmed teenagers even as they tried to move out of harm's way. That man was empowered by the Stand Your Ground statute. I am here to tell you there was no ground to stand. There was no threat. No one was trying to invade his home, his vehicle, nor threaten him or his family. There was a vociferous argument about music, during which the accused, Michael Dunn, did not feel that he was treated with respect. "You're not going to talk to me like that," he shouted, as he sprayed the car that Jordan sat in with bullets, killing him instantly. When Jordan's friends tried to back the car away, Mr. Dunn aimed his handgun and fired off several more rounds, 9 total, pierced the car. There are any number of ways that this interaction might have gone. But there was only one way it could have ended once a gun entered the equation.
Although we are celebrating in some manner that the police officers are going to be charged, that's just one step to getting justice, because we know full well that charge does not mean convicted. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people have to just take a step back and realize that although they might be charged, they have not been convicted of anything. In our case with Trayvon Martin, the person was charged. Yes, they were charged, and we had a full trial. But he, at the end of the day, he was not convicted. So he's walking around just like anybody else, as if he has done nothing. But we all know that God sits high and looks low. And though you might get away with man's law, God sees all.